Good afternoon, morning. Very close to both. Everybody, thank you for coming today to this very interesting session. My name is Brylan Cummings and I'm your chairperson for today. It's going to be a small but valued group of people today, so feel free to sit close to the front. In terms of the session today, everyone's going to speak for about 35 minutes with plenty of time for questions at the end. In terms of the questions themselves, the session is recorded, so if you wouldn't mind making your way to the microphone and just saying your name into the microphone before you ask your question, that would be appreciated. There's also, I think, something on the app which now enables you to give feedback from the session. So in terms of this session, Kerwin is a qualified actuary with experiences ranging from valuation to pricing, capital management to product development, and in both the private and public sectors. His current position is with Challenger as the product actuary. This presentation is from his research conducted at UNSW under the supervision of Professor Anthony Asher, and hence does not necessarily represent the view of either Challenger or ACRA, where Kerwin was previously employed at, but it certainly represents his views, and I think we're all keen to hear it today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think the disclaimer at the end is very important because I have no intention to say ACRA should hold less capital for longevity risk or more for Challenger. Well, let's start. Well, as a brief intro, I think I'm pretty familiar with the current regulations, both from LEGIC or 7C2. It's targeting the 100-year event as a level of sufficiency. Also, it's looking at the 1-year time horizon. For longevity risk, it's targeting at a permanent reduction of QX of a flat 20% rate. It's pretty much in the textbook. The merits for this kind of approach, one thing is pretty simple. It's got simple calculations, they're pretty easy to understand. Also, it ties in with the variance annuity, if anyone remembers from the actuarial 101. The variance annuity is something like that, in the orange line. It increases with age is because as you go older, the variance of the expected value gets bigger and bigger because the QX is getting very high at the end of the age spectrum. Whereas this blue line illustrates how the upper capital, substitute capital, increase over the age as well. But clearly, the variance of annuity is looking at the idiosyncratic risk, so the magnitude at the right-hand side is much bigger than the left-hand side. But clearly it shows some fundamental thinking when constructing the APRA approach or LEGIC approach in setting up the longevity capital. I think in contrast for normal insurance risk business, this line, we don't really see this upward sloping line. That being said, we also have issues to think about more. One thing is the non-linear effect. I think the longevity risk or the probability of living longer is pretty analogous to the risk of IP business when people facing the termination rates. So how likely is someone to terminate the policy or terminate the lifetime guaranteed policy? Also on the calibration, where is the 20% coming from? When I asked someone where the 20% coming from, they said it's been calibrated by a group of PhD to based on very high-tech technology to work that out. But obviously, let's say, RumSum approach is a pretty much international recognized approach, but how is that calibrated is still a mystery. Whether we should think about more in that, whether we should decompose that into the underlying risk rather than a flat percentage, because for any lifetime annuity business, the risk is not coming from APRA and not coming from regulation. It's really coming from the underlying risk that's driving the business. So how are we decomposing that? And also, as mentioned in this question, risk. And in LEGIC, I think for the life insurance margins, it's been more advanced than Solvency II, where it allows people to calibrate its own margins, whereas in Solvency II, it's 15% increase in margin, pretty much like a fixed margin. And also, luckily, people are not in a certain position of whether they're really targeting the 1 in 200 event or not. Right. And also the time horizon. Normally, in an appeal 1, in Solvency II or LAGIC, we are targeting the 1 year time horizon, which is the capital or sufficient capital to provide for the risk or the adverse shocks that may occur in the next year. But for annuity business, it's kind of unique in terms of it's a long-term guaranteed business, it's a single premium business, and also you don't have lot management action to assume, like you can't reprice. So the only kind of management action you may assume is maybe just raising more capital. So whether 1 year horizon is still sufficient in that sense, no insolvency too is a risk margin embedded in the asset liability, which is covering the risk of transferring to a third party like a reinsurer or some other to take over the business. But in LAGIC, we don't have that risk margin. So when someone is taking over your business, how are they likely to price your risk? I think this is long-term risk pricing. But we can't go for like lifetime horizon. It's just too onerous. Let's look at the definition of life expectancy. It's really about 50% of people cannot live up to that age. For a 60-year-old, 84 is pretty much the life expectancy. But if we're targeting 99.5 percentile, the person going to live much longer than 100, which is unlikely to not unlikely to live that long, but unlikely to provide for a reasonable basis for a company to provide for liability of extra 20 years. So what is the proper time horizon? We need a coherent view. We have proposed four principles under the overarching aim of being coherent. The first and utmost thing is to be systematic. Similar to the life insurance risk charge, we need to calibrate the margin specific to your portfolio and also look at the real risks and that's driven the business. So we need a systematic approach. There's been lots of research done to project mortality. I think that can be really useful in terms of calibrating the capital, not just a projection of a certain rate. So transforming mathematical tool into something like we can manage our business better. Also, we want to be consistent with the current regulatory regimes. We still like the 1-to-100-year event. But also think, need to think about both Pillar 1 and Pillar 2. In under Solvency II, people are required to think about a longer term than 1 year, maybe 3 years or 5 years, in line with the business plan. And also they can be more tailored to their own internal capital models. And third one is the business issue, like mentioned before. I think the only kind of measurement action they can assume for annuity business is to raise more capital. But how is that likely to happen? We can think about the business plan. Normally we have 3 years business plan or 5 years business plan. We can tie in that with the time horizon that will be assumed under the proposed capital framework. Also, risk measure. Coherent originally came from a risk measure terminology. Whereas, you know, VAR is not a coherent measure. We need some diversification benefit to be allowed so that we're not targeting at individual level, but at a portfolio level. Okay, this is the background or some building blocks to the island approaches. We look at the current capital framework. The top one is what people have been familiar with. And then there's a lot of literature in Europe spring out of the sovereign two regime. And people have came out different ideas on how to calibrate the longevity risk margins. And mortality studies, we do have earlier literature talking about autocorrelation of mortality risk over time. Also have more recent techniques to forecast mortality risk over time. And then we've got credibility theory. I think that's one of the very fundamental theory of how to calibrate your basis and basis and also your capital basis, because you need to assign certain credibility to your experience, also to your prior assumptions. Right? Before talking about the capital, I think is worth mentioning some thing about the basis and estimate assumption, because that's the real one that's underlying your liabilities. And also, if you don't get your best estimate right, it's unlikely to get the capital right. So I think it was mentioning how some of the approaches should be helpful in terms of calibrating the best estimate basis. For longevity kind of business, we have two things to worry about. One is the level, and one, the other is trend. The level is how annuitants are likely to live longer or more selected from the population. Whereas the trend talks about how likely people may improve their future mortality risk. Out of the two, normally people spend a lot of time modeling or projecting the future mortality trends. But for annuity business, I think trend is a relatively simple assumption to derive, because it's unlikely for annuitants to have a different trend or a very different trend than the population. So we can pretty much use the population trend to start with. Once we've got a prior, we can update it based on a classic credibility theory. I think that's in the current large standard in terms of hedging techniques. We can also implement that similarly to some of the assumption updating. The idea that's saying is really to assign certain credibility to experience and also assign certain credibility to the prior assumption, which is from the population. How this was constructed is to make sure that the larger size of the portfolio, the more credible is your experience, and also more stable is your experience, the more credibility we can assign to your experience. So we can update your prior basis quicker as your experience emerges. When it comes to the level, when we think about both initial and both permanent selection, initial selection is really when at time of purchasing the product, people are likely to be super selected than the normal long-term annuitants portfolio. But this is really a subjective exercise. One of the issues is whether we have enough and credible data to calibrate the permanent level selection effects. I think it's an ongoing issue. That's why we need to hold more capital. The building blocks for the capital framework here are some three. One is to allow for the misestimation of the trend, which is the future forecast or projection of the mortality rate over time. Next thing is to allow for the selection effects, whether you get your central estimate right. And then also the random fluctuations, which is the maybe very familiar with the statistical fluctuation in the random stress and the logic. Okay, so the three are really talking about systematic risk, and from that also need to talk about portfolio risk, which we will talk about in the later slides. We'll start with systematic risk first, because that's the fundamental REITs that's embedded in any annuity business, whereas for portfolio is kind of your own business measurement issue, and how credible you may rely on your portfolio experience to work out your future best estimate. For the systematic risk start with, the random stress leveraged from the logic framework, where people are already familiar with the meaning, the random stress, is really about the noise factors. The noise is random statistical fluctuations. Use Lee-Carter as one of example, which is a really easier model to start with for the industry purpose. We start with a level, and this level may vary over time as based on the trends. And then it's the noise factor, which is the random errors. The random errors is embedded with both the whole process, also with the kappa T, which is the trend. So we need to think about the statistical fluctuations that may increase over time. I think next slide shows an example of the projection. The red dots are the historical observations. Based on that, we can fit the data to project the future mortality rate. Given the nature of the model, we expect the stress line, which is the 99.5 percentile diverse scenario, the gap increase over time. That's because your variance will increase over time. I think intuitively that also makes sense, because it's unlikely to you get your best estimate immediately wrong if you are a sensible actuary, but over time it's more uncertain to project. And the gap is where we need to hold capital. And it's the data is based on England and Wales data, and assume some basic assumptions underlying the model, which is Lee-Carter. Right. This is the results of fitting this approach to data. So we see it's relatively a stable curve over ages, instead of seeing that increasing over time, because for 90-year-old, life expectancy is generally short. We don't have a really long time to make mistakes, and hence, when the gap, which is this gap, are discounted, the capital effect is less than some other ages. So it's a proposed random, which is one of the fundamental building blocks. And let's look at the trend. The trend is something that is harder to capture over time. Some literature already provide evidence that mortality rates may exhibit some autocorrelation over time. That is to say, when you misestimate your best estimate next year, the likelihood to misestimate further in the year after may be greater. So this is what they call the trend, or the momentum effect of mortality risk. And also, how far I need to go, we can allow that with the capital, with the business plan cycle. So maybe three to four or five years, when you allow for your misestimation or your increased likelihood of misestimation over time for 3 to 5 years. This is talking about re-estimate the trend. Say, once you realize the experience is really poor, how quick or how soon you can re-estimate. And once you re-estimate your best estimate line, this is the likelihood you may need to raise more capital. And at the time of raising more capital, the external capital providers, they may have a different view than yours of how long-term businesses may perform. Given you already experienced a poor experience, and then the capital provider may assume even worse future projection to your business and that raises issues like dilution of your existing shareholders' rights. This slide sets out the proposed techniques. It's not a prescription. It's just how it describes the way how we may estimate this level of risk. We adopted a rolling approach. The rolling approach is like we got 20 years data to estimate the future mortality movements. And then we can forecast next year's best estimate. Also, we can forecast next year's adverse projection. So once we take into account next year's adverse projection, we can use the historical 19 years instead of 20 years and roll out 20 years forward to next year's period. And we can repeat this rolling exercise for 3 to 5 times in line with your business plan. Then to work out to the capital or how the best estimate line may deviate from the original best estimate. And each time you're doing a rolling exercise, you may reduce 91.5% of sufficiency, so that in total, after repeating the exercise for 3 to 5 times, the total level of sufficiency covers 1 to 100 years. And this illustrates how this exercise works. So at the time of doing the projection, we have a distribution of the likely outcomes for the mortality rates for the next year. We can pick up the worst one and incorporate that into the historical data and rolling the observation window period to 1 to 3 years forward, and you may even extend that to a further couple of years. And then based on the rolling projection, you got your new central estimate. The previous component is about the variation of the central estimate, and this is really about how your central estimate may go wrong. And this is the result. Given the gap in this kind of projection is much narrower than the previous statistical fluctuation, we are seeing a lower level of proposed capital based on trend, but still maintaining the shape, whereas the risk should be in line with the business nature, not just as a rise of the mathematical calculation of 20%, which may increase over age. Right. This is talking about a selection effect. We don't intend this to be included in the final capital calculation, but I provide some thoughts or sparking some thoughts of whether we can hold more capital initially when we calibrate the level selection effects. So this is the selection effect we assume for the portfolio. But if that wasn't set with a level of prudence, we can hold capital margins, which to allow for a variation around that selection effect, and when calibrate new effects, then the difference between the two can be set aside as a level of reserve. So it's really saying to start conservative and then gradually relieve the reserve, which is better than you start not on a conservative basis, then suddenly realize the needs of raising more capital. And this is the shape of the likely outcome. And given it's also a factor-based approach, we see the upward sloping shape again. All right, let's move on to portfolio. Portfolio is not really mentioned specifically or explicitly under logical Solvency II, but it has caught a lot of attention in the technical world. And also, that has been explicitly allowed for under logic for the insurance risk charge, where we calibrate the future stress of calibrating your margin based on your observation, also based on your experience analysis. So this is something we can set with some discretion, and also based on your portfolio size, portfolio composition, and also how you update the prior assumption based on your experience. and also this, the diversifiable part, that's very important to drive your capital size. So this is saying we got the risk and also we got the credibility to assign to your portfolio experience. That's how we calibrate the portfolio level of capital. Two references, one is the Australian Working Group, another is recent academic findings that how to link your capital charge, or especially the longevity risk capital charge, to your portfolio compositions. This is an artificial example. Say you work out your age groups and also your gender components. That gives you pretty much some basis to work out your decrement table for your portfolio. This is a portfolio level of decrements, not the individual level. And from that, we can pretty much work out the required capital margins based on portfolio size. As you can see, the larger is your portfolio, the smaller capital margin there may be, because with a larger portfolio, you are likely to observe more stable experience, and also more credibility is likely to be assigned to your own portfolio rather than to rely on a third-party source. That's the importance to get your business right, because for annuity business, there's not a lot of annuity writers in Australia. If new entrants are entering the market, how are they likely to gather sufficient data to get their central estimates? If they don't have sufficient data, and also they have no sufficient experience, it's really a need to hold more capital beforehand. Okay, so in a nutshell, that summarizes the three components: the random, the trend, also the portfolio. We see the majority of the risk is coming from the future uncertainty of mortality projection. If you can get everything right, you have perfect knowledge of how people may live in the next 10 to 20 years. I don't think that may exist, but in reality, we don't have that perfect knowledge. And the historical pattern tells us the story as well. The trend is not always stable. And then the next level is the momentum effect. If you set your message wrong next year, you may very much likely to set it further wrong in the year after. And then we come to portfolio buffer. And this is based on the portfolio of 50,000 independent lives. And on aggregate view, we work out another alternative view of working out the capital based on underlying risks. And that can serve the purpose of the risk capital regime. I think that's the initial finding of the research, but further works are required as well. And we prepare for some questions to discuss, and also welcome to throw any thoughts or comments alongside as well. So I think this is a philosophy question. How are we setting the target for the capital, and how are we setting the level of target capital under the logic terms? Second thing is whether it's appropriate to say the portfolio trend is not likely to vary greatly from populations. And then another question is whether we have sufficient data to calibrate the selection effects. When you have data from the industry funds, if the industry funds or some other super funds have their own portfolio or their members, and that may provide an alternative basis than insurers to provide data, or especially when the industry data is it's kind of insufficient nowadays. And then the hot topics for the other NGOs is how are we kind of thinking about the capital for DLAs, given the DLAs and activities more remote. Being more remote means there may be more variance over time in the long term. And how are we bringing that to the nearest term is another question, whether the proposed framework is also appropriate for DLAs. And the 4GS says, if there's no guarantees, it's kind of no insurance risk charge required. If there's a level of guarantee or smoothness required, how are we setting the best basis for GS and also the capital? Right. I think that's off my talk. It's more open for discussions. Right. Yes.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for the presentation. I just want some clarification on your graphs. Can you go to the previous page, which shows the breakdown of your random and other risks? Can you tell me, where does the trend risk sit in? Is it in the random part or the momentum?
Trend is the momentum. So the orange one is what we call the momentum.
Yeah.
But that arises from the trend.
Yeah, so from my understanding, trend risk is probably one of the largest risks for annuity. So can you just give some insights on why the relativities between the random and the momentum, why the momentum is much lower than the trend, the random risk?
Yeah, sure. I think it's a maybe confusion of the terms here. The randomness that captures the trend as well, and that's where we see the increasing gap over time when we project mortality risk. So that already covers the trend. I think that's where the main risk coming from, which is right. What we call momentum is not really just to say how future trend may go wrong. It's really the risk of having to re-estimate your basis. So the trend, I think, from your terminology, is really focusing on random, whereas the momentum is how is how you may like to get your central estimate line wrong. So variance around the central estimate is really the trend, I think, in another term, whereas the momentum is how you get your central estimate line wrong. Does that make sense? Yes, please.
Thanks, Kerwin. Kenny McIver from Willis Towers Watson. I had a similar question, actually, because I was a bit confused by that, because I usually expect to see trend risk to be quite a major component, and that comes from my background with Solvency II.
Yep.
And I understand it's about classification, which is what you're ultimately saying. I did have a quick question and then a more detailed question. My first question was just to clarify, are we talking about lifetime annuities only here?
Or lifetime annuities.
This is not fixed-term annuities?
Not fixed-term,
right,
because
that was longevity. Yeah. Right, thank you. Yeah. Right, so I guess we talked about the misestimation of trend risk. The way I've come to think about this, just from my observations with some clients, is that it kind of breaks down into three big components, and it gets so when you get into the detail of it and sort of the causes of it, if you like.
Yeah.
And so the first one which you put up in your slides was population versus annuitant, and there's no real consensus there. I think there is some published information in the UK where there's lots of public England and Wales data and other sources that you've even cited here, and through what I've seen, there's three major publications, two lean one way and the other leads the other way, in terms of whether there's a positive mortality improvement seen within a higher socioeconomic group which you describe to the annuitant population. On the other two aspects, so drilling into the details, probably next question is your model correct? So if you're using Lee Carter, is Lee Carter just appropriate at all?
Mm-hmm.
There's many other options, and there's qualitative and quantitative ways of assessing whether that's the case. And that's become a lot of work under Solvency II for internal model approval, satisfying the regulator that you've chosen the right model.
Yep.
And in one that's become a very big piece is concept of new information risk, where something comes along in the course of 1 year, because we're talking about the one-year horizon, as you've stated a few times. Now, what is that new shocking piece of information that changes your whole perception about how trend develops? And that could be something like a new political approach to funding the welfare state, or it could be something more major, something from another sort of side of things, which could be changes in smoker behaviours, vaping and so forth. But there's a multitude, genetic testing and so forth, which you can run through and develop ideas on that. But I just, so my question, sorry people, is does your is that something you're interested in going into, those sort of deeper causes of misestimation of trend risk?
Of the trend risk, you mean, yeah. And the trend risk you mentioned is both the misestimation based on the modeling risk and also the misestimation by the company over time. I think one of the things you mentioned is pretty true is these two components, the bigger components, really is another way of looking at the model risk. So whether we should think about model risk instead of the longevity risk is, I think, is a bigger question. If we get our model right, then we can reduce the relative sensitivity or variance over time. But the cliche is it's no perfect model. That's why we need to hold capital, not just from the risk that's arising from the projection, but also on a portfolio basis. In terms of the trend over time, maybe the general improvement of health, there also may be something that's kind of counterintuitive. One of the interesting article I read after part of research is whether you should expect the future mortality to go up or down when you just experience a pandemic flu. I think the immediate answer is you will have mortality shock and then everybody will die. Not everybody, but more people may die. And hence your mortality risk is level elevated over time. But some findings that the poorer health, they are more likely to die out of the pandemic flu, and there may be a cure for the flu. So over time, it's the selected lab who may more likely to survive. And the poorer health already died during the first few years. So over time, after a pandemic flu, you may as expect the long-term mortality rate to go down instead of go up. I think that's another course of the trend as well, not just the normal one we may expect, but also some others we may put more further investigation before come to the conclusion. So lots of variance and variability come to the risk calibration. So I think one thing we need to get some best estimate right based on a good model but not a perfect model, and also allow for your actuarial judgment and how likely is your portfolio to perform way too much deviated from your prior assumptions. And that's where the credibility theory may come to effect. Based on experience after your prior to form your posterior and repeat the exercise over time, I think that is where the capital is really about.
Thanks, Kevin. Just on the next slide, you talk about implications for group self-annuitisation products. Can you explain what you see in these products in a SIPA environment that maybe imposes guarantees so that there is a need for capital apart from operational risk capital, and how that distinguishes them from CDCs?
Yeah, sure. I think it's a challenging topic because I don't have a lot of experience on this. area in Australia. And I think the fundamental risk for GSAs is the pool runs out of money. Then that doesn't suffice the purpose of establishing the pool originally. Because the goal of the GSA is really to provide another way of protection to protect your longevity risk over time without imposing too much capital on that. And to estimate every year's payout, you need to smooth out, similar to your participating business, you need to smooth out the payments, the experience payment over time, if I'm right. And as you smooth out, that already creates some risk, because smoothing is another way of guaranteeing the payments. But whether we should call capital for that is more like a philosophical question. And if you put some guarantees in that, your payout wouldn't reduce less than a certain level, I think that's a relatively easier way to think of capital, because you know the guaranteed level. Once you know the guaranteed level, you can work out your best system projection over time, look at the gap and take the present value. That's pretty much your capital. But the tricky thing is, if you don't have a guaranteed level, but how you can set your central estimate right, especially for this kind of pooling, taunting products. I think this another risk, not capturing capital, but need to be thought more deeply. Does that make sense?
Rylan Cummings, KPMG. I think this sort of research is quite interesting. The when you think about logic in Australia, it's the way the stand is designed is quite interesting. It's the 95% chance of how you might change your assumptions in 12 years' time is really what you're protecting against, including, you know, the stochastic variation of random, which isn't part of this paper. And when you're thinking about what might change in 12 months' time, there's very little in the way of game changes that happen in 12 months. Like, even if, you know, they discover the cure to cancer next year, which they're, you know, perpetually talking about, by the time it was sort of rolled out and, you know, accessible to people in an affordable manner, it's how many years down the track, you don't quite know. So it's quite unlikely those kind of game-changing events are going to occur in a 12-month time frame to change your assumption. Looking, I guess, to a slightly different paradigm, which is when I'm, you know, when you think around the fact that IFRS 17 is now coming, and that's going to require you to have a risk margin. So, unlike right now, where you know, fortunately or unfortunately, just given a number by APRA for our prudential capital, which we need to put in, when IFRS 17 comes in, that risk margin will, of course, be a number that is entirely up to the company to calculate, and that is a number which doesn't have a one-year time horizon. It is, of course, for the full duration. And so if I was to think about your research and how it might be applied into IFRS 17, what do you think are, like, the key differences in terms of that time horizon, which is kind of like that first point that you put in there, in terms of additional things that you'd need to consider versus what you've currently allowed for?
Oh, that's a very good question. The short answer is not very sure, because IFRS 17 just been released a couple of days ago. I think also it depends on the nature of the business, if I'm right to say that whether we have sufficient means of measure action to assume or not. I think that's the main issue to think about, what to calculate the time horizon. In the IFRS 17, we have the risk margins, and risk margin is somehow different to the risk margin under Solvency II. Solvency II's risk margin, I think that's more the long-term transfer of business, whereas IFRS 17 is more shorter term. So it depends on the business income, the capital. I'm not sure whether it's a problem to come to say in this way, but the capital should really be business driven, not a factor-driven approach. I think that's the conclusion of the research. Does that make sense?
Thank you.